I'm Aria Schwartz along with Rachel Galligan, and welcome to the Windsider Show, where it's all about the W. The draft is near, March Madness is about to start, and free agency was exciting, but now it's calmed down a little bit with a few final moves still waiting to be official. There's tons to discuss, so let's dive right in. Welcome back to the Windsider Show. Very excited to be here with my pal, Rachel Galligan. There's tons of headlines in the women's basketball WNBA world, so let's discuss. I guess the main topic, the big thing right now, I don't know why we continue to give, and we're not even going to say the names of the people, because I don't think, and I assume Rachel agrees with me, I don't think we should be giving attention to, excuse my languages, these morons who don't know what they're talking about, who see, oh, women's basketball is on the rise. Let me try and get a take in. Let me try and get a comment in to make myself, I don't know, known, relevant in this industry, whatever it is, whatever they're doing, they're stumbling, falling right on their face, and they look like idiots. I'll do my version of the breakdown, and Rachel, feel free to be more eloquent and smarter, but essentially NIL, okay? Name, image, likeness. For anyone who thinks that these players are going to take a giant, severe pay cut going to the W, I have two things to say. One, you're not paid to play college basketball. You're not. There's no contract for just playing. Every player has different NIL deals. Some are connected through the school. Some are individual. And some have a variety of different means of getting you paid, essentially. My point is this. If you are a college player, and you have major endorsements from Gatorade, international companies, national companies, it would be stupid by these companies to cancel their partnership with you the moment you go to the pros. So are there, you know, the chicken stop in Des Moines, Iowa might not be Caitlin Clark's, you know, NIL sponsorship when she goes to the pros, probably because she can get a better deal from somebody else who's going to pay her more money and has a larger reach. So are there some players who are going to miss out on money by going to the pros? Yes, but only in the sense that those players are probably not major name players who, they have like those random local deals through the school and probably don't have a future in the W, if I'm being blunt. Any player who's going to be in the W is going to get other sponsorship deals from a variety of other places. And these superstars are not losing out on money by going to the W.
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking about the magnitude that is Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, I mean, that type of level of NIL opportunity that is coming through a collective, which is tied to the school. I mean, it's so crazy to me because it's difficult for people to grasp what NIL actually means. Trust me, it's difficult for the coaches to grasp what NIL means. I know because I've been involved in it here in the last year and a half, as everyone's very much trying to figure it out and how they can get their players money and what this looks like. The magnitude of money that we're talking about at this highest level with a Caitlin Clark and what she brings to the table. Now, like, that stuff is not going to just be lost. You know what I'm saying? Like I'm totally with you. I think there was a good example where I think it was Fox and or maybe through the Peacock stream, whatever it was thinking about maybe offering her a deal to remain in college so that they have the rights to the Iowa games for one final year. Okay, there's an example of maybe a potential missed opportunity that obviously wouldn't carry over to the WNBA. So you have to look at it like case by case, company by company, opportunity by opportunity. But again, the magnitude that Caitlin Clark is making money off her name, image, and likeness does not go away. She's going to continue to make money, and she's going to continue to make more money because of what she's brought to the game and what she'll continue to bring to the game. But yes, to echo off kind of what you said, like I don't breathe life into people like that because they've built their entire careers of saying ignorant things. And so like when you do that, you're just feeding into what they want, in my opinion. So I just don't even acknowledge it.
Well, it's the perfect segue because we're talking about Caitlin Clark. One of my favorite things. So Caitlin Clark, announces that she's planning on going into the draft. She's entering the draft. Very excited. The Indiana Fever, props to their social media account. they have, I don't even want to say tiptoed the line. They have just played it like, we know who we're taking. You know who we're taking. Let's just be real about it. And I think it's hilarious. You know, I'm kind of surprised there aren't more complainers out there saying, oh, this is tampering, blah, 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 blah. But like, end of the day, Indiana Fever would be stupid to not take Caitlin Clark if she's in the draft, which she says she intends to be. What do you think for the Fever as a franchise? I know you have some hometown ties to them. I know that you have many friends and family who have had to suffer for the last 12 years. Talk to me about what Caitlin Clark means with the pairing of Aaliyah Boston for the future of this team.
It just feels like to me, we've put in our time here of suffering. I mean, it was some long, treacherous years here of us getting on here and talking about the Fever. And the last couple of years have been better. I mean, obviously, I think you started to see it no longer was plummeting. It started to kind of maybe hit rock bottom and then only go up because that's really all it could do. And so we had a little bit to be excited about. And then you had Aaliyah Boston to be excited about. And it started to kind of trend in the right direction. And now I do genuinely feel like this is, I don't want to say the final piece, but this is the piece that we've been waiting on. This has been why we went through those just dumpster fire years that I remember talking about. Oh my God, that it kind of gives me PTSD a little bit to think about how bad some of those, you know, free agencies were and moves were, and like, oh my gosh, just how unfortunate Tamika Catchings was being in that position when she just had no guidance on what to do. Oh, it was just really painful. So I'm very relieved. I'm very thankful. I was living in Indiana at the time when we won the championship, and it just feels like, okay, like I project we are at least out of the lottery next year, in my opinion.
You got to think, especially with what happened to DC. I mean,
right. Like in my, not to get too far into like, you know, preseason power rankings, but like if we can just get into like the eighth spot,
it's going to be like, just to be, I'll say this, to have a dynamic duo. I'm not going to say a Batman and a Robin because Caitlin Clark hasn't played in the W yet. Aaliyah Boston has already established herself as a budding star in this league. So I just think, been yelling this for years now, to be a contender, to be a respectable team in this league, you have to have those two superstars. You have to have at least, like, there's no team in the league that is contending for a championship or a legit playoff spot, you know, a higher seeded playoff spot without having two superstars, two undeniable, you know, greats for your team. So for me, I agree with you. That's the final piece in the sense of, okay, it's now about those two players growing, and there's other players to grow, but now building around them to create a contender.
And I would say, just to echo off that, it's not because they got Caitlin Clark that now I think they're contender or they're a middle of the pack WNBA team. That's not what I'm saying. I think this team is already trending in a direction where they have enough pieces. They have enough talent, young talent. What does that talent need? They need experience on the court. They need experience, you know, going through a couple seasons, playing together, some consistency, some longevity. So it's already trending the right way. Now you add a player like Caitlin Clark, who, yeah, she's going to have her own transition to the WNBA. But I'll tell you right now, she's going to impact the WNBA in year one. I guarantee you that. Now, to the magnitude in which she's going to impact it, we could debate that all day. I know everybody has various beliefs, you know, opinions. I think she will have a significant impact to the Fever in year one. So like, again, I'm not saying because of Caitlin Clark, it's because of Aaliyah Boston. It's because of the other pieces of this team that they've been assembling for the last few years. And like I said, it's still like nowhere near a finished product, but you're at least getting out of the frickin' lottery, which we've been in for the last, 6 years, 7 years. It's exciting times. I mean, there's obviously no doubt that Fever are going to select Caitlin Clark. I think it's great that the, franchise and the social media, like as soon as she kind of tweeted that out, within like, you know, 45 minutes, it was like, hey, season tickets on sale now. I mean, they should.
The best, I think, was like when they're just randomly tweeting things like, congrats to Caitlin Clark for like, as if she was just another random player or whatever. Like, oh, we see what you're, I love it. I'm all about it.
And like, this is a franchise that like used to really get major crowds. I know, because I was one of those people that we would go every Sunday to those games. But now it's dropped off. We've watched this crowd really diminish because of the dumpster fire that it's been. So now like the crowd, and I am not surprised that she's going to the WNBA. We've talked about it. Her boyfriend works for the Indiana Pacers. I think she needs to be challenged in a new way. That doesn't surprise me whatsoever. But at the same time, like this is a perfect market for her, a Midwestern market. You're still able to pull that Iowa crowd, you know, the Illinois crowd, you know, all of that heartland, the Midwestern crowd of the United States, which, let's be honest, that's her bread and butter. I think it's a perfect market for her. And I'm assuming when she sat down with all of her, you know, deals and all of her, you know, big companies and talked about the money, everybody agreed with that. So I think it's actually a really smart move. It's a really smart career move.
I mean, yeah, because the only other option is hope that the Lynx, right?
Imagine Chicago Park, like,
goes to Chicago.
Chicago wouldn't be that bad because it's still Midwest, but, or like,
yeah, no, but Chicago would be bad because Chicago's a dumpster fire also. And like, I'm no, you know what I'm saying?
It's not the same dumpster fire as Chicago.
Exactly. Well, like, Indiana was arguably the most frustrating team in this league because they had the tools, right? They have this great partnership with the Pacers. They have facilities. They have brand new, all these things. But yet it was just run from a GM coaching perspective for so many years in a bad, horrible, self-inflicting pain way. And look, I'm excited in that sense. Also, like, I'm a hater, right? So like, part of me is like, I just hate when teams are so bad for 12 years and then they get two amazing generational talents and then all of a sudden they're good and blah, blah. But I do think with Indiana, it's still going to take some time. I view Indiana maybe...
Same thing as the Aces. I mean,
well, I was going to say Dallas. I was looking more at Dallas even, where Dallas is a team that had so much young talent like Indiana has. Obviously, they came to it in different ways, but had so much young talent. Now it's going to take time with them together. I think Indiana is going to be much better. I don't think they're a lottery team anymore. That said, I don't think, you know, some people are like, oh, contender, blah, blah, blah. No, not yet. They're going to take some time. They're going to need to grow together.
Yeah. They're going to be borderline lottery.
But yeah. And no, like, look, we'll see how this team comes together. But I think if you look at this team, it's built to not have the highest expectations, but to set themselves up in a year or two, they can be in a position when Aaliyah Boston and Caitlin Clark really get their sea legs, as it were. I mean, look, Aaliyah Boston was dominant last year, so like, she has her sea legs to a degree, but like, she's only going to get better. And I think we're going to see major growth from the Indiana Fever, and it's going to be an exciting future for them. Something that's been talked about a lot throughout this free agency and last free agency, and I'll be a little bit of a downer and I'll say that this has been going on for years, but now we have more information when it comes to contracts, what players are taking and whatnot. But a hot topic headline, as it were, in the women's basketball WNBA world has been free agent vets taking unprotected deals or, you know, low minimum deals, things like that, to try and be on contenders or teams that can make a push. And to me, it's like, okay, we've seen that before. We saw that in Minnesota. We saw that in a variety of other places at times where, hey, we have this great nucleus. We just need pieces around it. I think, look, I will be the first to say it. I was extremely harsh and hard on the Las Vegas Aces and their GM moves. And they have flipped it around, right? They have been able to make this team better coming off of championships. Now, we saw that arguably in a place like Chicago after they won a championship, but I think it's different in a lot of ways. But what do you think in the terms of vets taking unprotected deals? No, so, you know, like Stewie or JJ or, you know, some of these other big names, not all of them are taking protected deals. Some of them just want to win.
Well, and they want to win, but they also want to be a part of a great, great franchise. A franchise that's being run the right way, that has resources and recovery and facilities and, you know, $1 billion owners. I mean, that is the part of this that is fascinating. It's not like we're seeing unprotected deals and people are going to Chicago, you know, like, or even Minnesota. I mean, again, no knock on Minnesota, because that's a completely two completely different type of franchises. But what you're seeing is like people want to be a part of the Las Vegas Aces because of the added extra benefits and bonuses that come with being a part of that team, which nobody wants to talk about, but are very much happening. Same things happening in Phoenix, same things happening in New York. Some people feel like, oh, they're cheating and this isn't fair. Other GMs would sit here and say, we don't know what the rules are. So how do we compete with some of these powerhouses and stretch the rules as well? There are added benefits and bonuses that are taking place that are outside of just the salary. And people want to be a part of these franchises that are ran, in my opinion, the best in the league. And we know who those are at this point. I think it's very obvious, you know, Vegas, New York, now Phoenix. You know, you could probably start to wonder a little bit about Seattle. I think Seattle has enough recognition and support and facilities and everything that people want to be a part of that. But like, I don't blame these players, because I think they're monetizing it and they're making up for some of that salary cut in other ways.
Well, I do think something that's interesting, like, all right, Stewie taking on a protected doesn't mean anything to me personally, because there's no way New York's stupid enough to cut her, right? Like, there's no way they're going to go, oh, we're in a tight crunch and, you know, she's injured, we're going to cut her so that we can stop. You're not going to do that, because then you're cutting off getting her for future years, whatever. Yeah. You're burning that bridge, I would assume. JJ, obviously protected. Sorry, I misspoke earlier. But a funny thing for me is I look at Seattle, and Seattle, they kind of went an opposite way where they gave protected to Skylar and NECA, and they're using all their protecteds to bring in players because, and maybe, you know, obviously this is my assumptions, whatever, because they're trying to establish that. They know that players know that they have the ownership and the facilities, but now they haven't been since Sue left that powerhouse. And this was an opportunity for them to say, hey, we have those superstars, now come join us. I mean, Candace Parker's another vet who's taking an unprotected contract, lower than, you know, she probably could have gotten offered from a variety of other teams. But at the end of the day, it comes down to wanting to find ways to win. And like you said, be part of those teams that are committed to the players.
Well, and how much of this has to do with the new CBA coming down the pike?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and some of the changes that are going to take place. And, you know, so much is going to be different when that is all, you know, discussed and Players Association voted upon, all those sorts of things. And so I think that's a lot of why you're seeing, you know, these 1 year unprotected type of situations, because a lot's going to change. I mean, you know, it feels like it was just yesterday where this new CBA came into play. Well, now, like, we're on the brink of the next one and a lot's going to change. And I think that that's obviously very much at play here.
Well, and then, I mean, there are some players who are smart enough to say, I will take a longer contract because I know I'm not going to get a better contract like this, especially because the thing that people aren't ready to talk about, which I'll just kind of put it out there and then we'll move on to the tourney. But like, people need to remember and talk about the shift and then the adjustment period after. When a new CBA comes to, and we saw this, you know, a few years ago when they signed the new CBA, all of a sudden it was, throw tons of money and rosters got super top weighted. And then there was a year of readjusting. And then there's another, and now we've kind of, and I don't know why.
We've poked holes at like the deficiencies of it. And everybody,
exactly. And now GMs have grown smarter and understand how to go about this and understand the market. So it's going to be interesting those first few years and kind of what GMs are able. The CBA arguably is the biggest, when new CBAs are signed, is arguably the biggest challenge for a GM in certain aspects. So I think it's a really interesting aspect that we'll have to talk about future a lot more. March Madness, Rachel, you don't have to pick a team because I'm not that big of a jerk. But for me, you know me, WNBA person, not watching the most college basketball, watch a few games. Randomly will text you, who's number blah, blah, blah on this team. I'm a fan. What's going on with this player? Give the REA Cliff Notes of like what teams aren't, you know, Iowa, South Carolina, and LSU or UConn that I should even, you know, pay attention to. And what are some players that, even if they're not necessarily in this upcoming draft officially yet, but what are some players that, like, you know what? If you're not a college, if you're a WNBA fan, you would enjoy watching these players. Anybody? Well,
I think, I mean, South Carolina has been unbelievable what they've been able to do, losing their entire starting lineup and arguably in some ways be more dominant in the way they play, the way they score the basketball, the way they defend. So obviously, I mean, South Carolina, only remaining undefeated team in the country. You know, Iowa, you know, I think has the potential. I don't know that they're, they could, I guess, but I don't know that they're a Final Four team. I just don't think they have the same amount of loaded talent across the board as they did last year. Ohio State, that's a team that's really impressive to me. I think Kevin McGuff has put together, you know, a really veteran team. You've got a lot of seniors. You've got some young talent that I think could make a deep run. This is arguably one of his best teams that he's put together. You know, I mean, UConn has just been so, I mean, I think their ceiling is only going to go so far, just because of the injury aspect. Virginia Tech, I'm a huge Hokie fan. Unfortunately, Liz Kitley went down with an injury last week. And I mean, they probably won't confirm what it actually is because it could impact the seeding.
Pulling the classic Notre Dame.
Yeah. Yeah.
You like that college joke for you?
I think that's probably what's going to happen there. But I mean, obviously right now, this is why we're recording so early this morning, is because I'm going to get off here and go watch basketball all day, being in the conference tournament grind. But like, I love Virginia Tech. I'm a huge Georgia Amore fan. I know you probably haven't watched her.
I've heard the name.
She has not made a decision whether she would stay or go next year. So that's a big one, kind of her decision making. Like, does she use that fifth year? And I still think she's the number one draft pick. If she comes out this year, she's still a part of, you know, that first round, not number one, but first round. Notre Dame is clicking on all cylinders right now. They're playing some of their best basketball this season. I think they could go through, depending on the Liz Kitley injury, they have a chance to win the ACC tournament, you know? So I don't know. I mean, I feel like, and then you've got Kansas State, you know, Ioka Lee. And I think that's a team that, you know, if they catch lightning in a bottle. I mean, they've been ranked as high as I think two or three at some point this year. And like, that's a team not a lot of people are talking about at our level. But I personally think, you know, this thing is wide open. You know, you got Colorado in there, my hometown team, Utah.
Yeah. I got two questions. One, is Utah the one with, is it Pili? Pili? Yeah.
Talk to me. She is kind of a tweener. Like almost an undersized post, a big guard. She's versatile and she's really strong. She can score a lot of ways. She can play with her back to the basket and score down low. She can stretch the floor and shoot the three. I think she's like a 41% 3-point shooter this year. She's just kind of a Swiss Army knife. And I know a lot of WNBA teams are fans of her. I could definitely see her going in the first round. And honestly, I think she's a little bit underrated. I think people are sleeping on her a little bit. And how good she is, and how, again, the versatility piece. When you have a player that can kind of play any of those, you know, 2, 3, 4 type of positions and really expose mismatches, I think she's really good. Really good. You get a chance to watch her. Please do, everybody.
Maybe I'm making this up. Alicia Clark, is that a fair comparison?
Maybe from like the Swiss Army knife type of comparison, maybe. I think Pili is a little more like her build, you know, is a little more like would remind you of like kind of more of a back to the basket post player.
Okay.
But that's not, it's not terrible. When I look at her, when I was actually doing this, working on this mock draft yesterday, and I was
to be fair, I'm basing it just off of how you described her. That was a WNBA player that came to mind. So I'm curious. I mean,
both proficient scorers, both people, you know, they could score a lot of ways. They could score down low. So yeah, maybe that is a good comparison. I just think she's something different across the board. I think with her strength in general too, is something that's unique. And so that's actually not a terrible comparison. I hadn't thought of that. But yeah, like I could see a lot of WNBA teams really liking her because I think her game would translate fairly well. But yeah, she's a big one. And I think she'll go in the first round if I had to guess.
Last college question, Juju. You told me a while ago, forget the hype, just watch her. She's so fun to watch. Like, just watch her. I have watched. She's so fun.
Yeah.
I
future, in my opinion. You know,
I mean, wow.
I mean, you know, you look at USC and just kind of this quick resurgence, it's so impressive. And, you know, I'm honestly surprised I didn't quite bring it up. I just think with her only being a freshman and this team kind of being just now this year back into this kind of national spotlight, you know, I feel like, okay, give them another year or two together and watch them, you know, they're not far from being in that Final Four discussion, in my opinion, especially when you got a generational talent like Juju Watkins. I mean, she is as special as they come. Everything that's being said about her is true. I mean, granted, she plays in the Pac-12, so it's like nearly impossible to watch her play for me. But the few times I've been able to, or I've been able to pull her up on Synergy, I mean, just out of this world in terms of her skill set and her mentality. That's the most impressive thing as a freshman coming out here with that killer instinct that she has. And I mean, how scary is that going to be, you know, by the time she's a senior in the way she's playing? I mean, she's the future of the game. She's the future of the game.
I definitely need to watch more. I haven't watched anything of her on defense closely at all, but what I've seen, if I'm being real, and call me crazy, call me, you know, bias, whatever, I'm seeing flashes of Maya Moore and Simone Augustus in her game.
Ooh, okay.
She's just fun to watch. She's entertaining. She's fun.
Yep.
I'm excited to see where she ends up. When the great day graces us that she comes to the W. Caitlin Clark, we talked about her earlier, but we just got to give a little bit of credit, right? Breaking Pistol Pete's record.
Amazing.
Records left and right, doing it in half court shots the way only Caitlin Clark does. Any thoughts on, I know we've talked way too much about college basketball players
for
this episode for my comfort,
but it's good. It's March. My only thoughts are, you know, I've tried to soak in every moment here of her final year in college and what we've been able to watch over the last couple of years. Especially when she started really getting national spotlight and bringing that national spotlight. I mean, what she's doing, you know, by attracting fans and attracting people who have never given a flying F about our game is so special. I couldn't even get my sister Hardly to come watch me play college basketball, and she'll text like, when is Caitlin playing today?
That's the best.
Nikki will be like, I'll be like, oh, you want to watch this game with me? And she's like, yeah, no, I'm good, and goes and does something else. And then she's like, oh, is Caitlin playing? And like has to sit down with me. Or what time is Caitlin playing? And I've watched that time. I'll be in the grocery store here in Colorado, and someone will see that I'm just a tall person. And they'll be like, hey, what do you think of that Caitlin Clark? I mean, I think that's amazing that it's kind of transcended. Just, she's a household name. And because she's become a household name and she's so exciting for people, they want to be a part of our game. And that's special because, right, that's what we're doing here every single day, and what's what we're fighting for every single day. And I think the way she's handled this as a, I mean, what is she, 22? As a 22-year-old? I don't even know if that's her actual age, but around that age, a young 20-year-old handling this pressure and this national spotlight and everything that's being thrown at her. I remember when I was a senior in college and like how I was functioning. And I'm just so impressed with how she's conducted herself and how, and every interview she ever gives, she talks about her teammates and she gives credit to her teammates and her coaches. And I just think she's been really graceful through this entire thing. And I can't imagine the pressure that's on her shoulders, but I think she's handled it with so much poise. And so I'm just personally trying to step back and just really soak in this moment in time and what she's been able to do, because it is special. This is what sports are about, is being able to see these special record-breaking, unbelievable moments. That's how people become fans of something. That's how people will really get drawn into a game. And that's what she's helping our game kind of grow in. And so I'm just really thankful for it. And I'm just trying to just enjoy every minute I can finishing up watching her play. And then we'll get to the point where we talk about her WNBA career. But right now I'm just living in the moment.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy how many friends similarly have never shown any interest in women's basketball.
And you're like, where have you been?
Yeah, right. All of a sudden blowing up. I have a friend, I'm not going to name names, but I have a friend who his kids go to the same school as Rebecca Brunson's kid. And they, you know, become friendly and go to whatever. I, for years, have been trying to get this guy. He's a huge basketball head.
And there's so many great women and storylines and records. And I mean,
And so, you know, talking to him, he's like, oh, well, because I was hanging out with Brunson, I started to start watching college basketball and all this. And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, now you're watching. And then he's texting me, I can't believe this game's on Peacock. I'm so upset. I'm never watching women's basketball again. It's so stupid. How can they do this to us? And then like a week later, 2 days later, it's I'm watching it again. And oh, my God, she's so amazing on this, this and that. And I'm like dropping stuff on him. And he's like, blown away by the most simplistic, you know, things that we've, whatever. The point, not saying that Caitlin Clark is simplistic. What I'm trying to say is like, there's so many amazing women's basketball players. Instead of, and this is my take at least, instead of closing the door on these people who are coming to join the fan bus, the fan train, whatever it is, the hype train, let's embrace them and let's try and be like, hey, learn a little bit of the history.
Well, and this is what it is. Rick, we all can think about that moment. Who was that person that would, that opened the door? Who we all want to be a part of greatness. We all want to witness greatness. We all want to feel like we have our hand in this moment in time that's greatness. And like, who was it for you? I know who it was for you, Simone Augustus. For me, it was Cynthia Cooper as a very young little girl. Like, we all want that person that we just kind of connect to. And she's doing that with so many people here currently in 2023, 2024. And we should not shut the door on these people. We should welcome in and help them learn and help them understand the vast amount of other phenomenal, you know, histories and records and just how beautiful this game is. So I don't know, like I said, I'm really just thankful to be in, and it was the same thing. I mean, not the same, it was a little different with Kelsey Plum. But you know, the type of hype and, you know, media attention she was bringing, you know, same thing with Angel Reese, like last year after the tournament and everything they did, you know, she attracted a whole type of group of fans and people that really, you know, wanted to jump on the LSU bandwagon and, you know, just kind of the personality that she is.
Well, I feel like there's three women's college basketball players, the biggest names in college sports right now. Maybe I'm crazy. Maybe I'm living in my bubble, but I feel like, you know, Angel, Clark and Juju are the sure. biggest names in college basketball, no doubt. Yeah. College sports in general, I would even argue they are the biggest names in it, which is a sign of the times, but also just like, let's not make this the peak for women's basketball. Let's continue doing the work. These new people who are joining, hey, if you're a content creator, that means you got 1,000 new eyes for your old content. Mm-hmm. If you're, you know, whatever you are, it just means more opportunity to, you know, welcome them in and say, hey, let's grow the game. Because at the end of the day, if you're a fan of the W, if you're a fan of women's basketball, you want it to get better so that the situations for these players are better. And then the last thing we'll chat about real briefly, Toronto, apparently back in the news, trying to make a push to be the 14th team in the WNBA. You know, again, I would say twofold. One, I believe news is going to be coming out by the time this comes live, so I can say that there'll be a WNBA game again in Canada this coming season. We're not going to break the news and tell you where it's going to be played or who's playing in it, but that information will be out before you listen to this pod, so there's no reason for us to even pretend we're breaking it. Right. But the point is that there's going to be more games in Canada. Toronto's bid, you know, fluctuated from one side saying, oh, you upped the buy-in, the other side saying, oh, you didn't commit to giving us the arena for the amount of time we wanted, back and forth. Honestly, if I'm being real, it was petty stuff. And as I said before, and I'll say it again, it was a total swing and the miss by the league to not have another team lined up. We thought it was Portland, then Portland fell through. If you are going to turn down and make it definitive no to a team, in my opinion, at least, you have to have another one backed up, you know, waiting on deck, whatever the term is. Because otherwise, what are we doing? And if we're going to have a Canadian team, you need charter flights. I don't know how else you do it unless like American and Canadian governments like make a rule for any time a WNBA team is on the commercial flight, they don't have to go through. Like what are we talking about?
Yeah, you're talking to someone who is in Denver, who was a part of that bid and hearing some of the whisperings and the from the ownership group and things that how that went down here, I'm a little bit like bitter at the league and just kind of how this was handled from like a, I don't know. I'm going to try to be careful here and not say anything that burns bridges, but You don't want to burn bridges. You've got people with money who want to invest in your game. Let's continue to work together. Let's continue to communicate. We know that expansion is going to span far past just this year. We're talking about maybe two more years here in a couple of years. So how are you going to not communicate, not get back to people, burn bridges, have these disagreements? It's just, I don't know that this, I don't know, and I don't know this for a fact, but I don't know that this whole expansion process has been handled well by the league, by Kathy. I don't know. It sounds like to me there's been a lot of, it hasn't been handled great. And I think you saw the same thing in Toronto. Is it petty stuff? The same stuff in Portland? I don't know. You know, Toronto might have been a little more internal issues with like amongst themselves. But to me, I'm just cautiously, I guess, willing to be optimistic about Toronto. I'm not excited. I'm not impressed with how this expansion process has taken place. I don't quite understand how we're going to do the flights. I mean, I just don't know how that looks. I don't think that we're quite ready for that yet. But who knows? Maybe if, you know, this is a year and a half or whatever from now, like maybe it can get to that point. Maybe there's a greater plan in place. So, I don't know. I'm just saying I'm not excited about any of this. I'm just going to wait and see what happens because there's too many reports of Toronto. Then it falls through Portland. Then it falls through. Oh, we want to reopen the door in Denver. Then it falls through. I mean, it's just,
oh, we got a new billionaire over here. Oh, then it falls.
It just sounds just messy right now. And I'm not going to allow myself to really analyze anything or get excited about anything until something's set in stone.
Look, I am not one to pull any punches against the league. I think at certain times, I don't blame the W because I blame the NBA. I don't blame Kathy because I think sometimes her hands are tied. This is something that, again, I'll say, I don't know. It's possible that this is a bigger than the W thing and it's not the W's fault.
I agree. Totally.
Definitely possible. End of the day, like, whatever the litmus test, whatever the way to judge them is, the expansion process has not been run smoothly from what you and I have both heard from a variety of different people.
At least it doesn't feel like it from our perspective.
Yes. It feels very much like a stumble, a trip, and if
we're just kind of fumbling into the next potential place. And then that falls through. Okay, let's fumble into the next potential
place. I feel like I'm in a disheveled suit going into a meeting with a binder of folders and I bump into the door and all the full papers fly everywhere and I'm trying to reshuffle them. That's what it feels like.
Yeah, that's what it feels like. And maybe we're completely off base and we're wrong. But now when I step back and I think about, you know, the expansion and what we have in place. And yes, that of course excites me, but it just doesn't feel like it's been smooth, but I am excited to talk about this through the next year and what that means and expansion drafts. I mean, we're going to have no shortage of content to talk about. That's for damn sure. But yeah, I mean, I don't know, whatever. At least we're on the brink of it. And we do know that there is, an urgency, not a sense of urgency, but to add that 14th team. I think it's got to be figured out sooner than later. And if Toronto's it, then I'm excited to see what kind of plans and, you know, logistics they have in play to make that work.
I'll just be mad if they add another team and then they add two more teams to the playoffs. Well, it's like you can't have the whole league making the playoffs.
I just look at some of these. You know, we're talking about expansion, but then we have a franchise like Chicago. And I'm going to be extremely harsh on Chicago because I feel like I can. But like,
what are you doing?
how is that even functioning? Like, and again, this is a whole other thing.
But talk about PR. I mean, we can go into that, but like, that's a different story. But like, talk about PR spins. They win the championship. They don't capitalize on that to get things done. Now they're playing catch up. Oh, you know, we should get a stadium with some public funding.
There's nothing in place. There's nothing actually happening.
Rachel, I don't know if you saw this. An excuse they had was the fact that we haven't built anything yet should tell you how serious we are about building something because we won't do it unless it's like what we want or something. Was the most asinine head backwards thing I've ever heard. Chicago is a mess. You literally have a player handpick the coach and then dip out a month later.
Well, and then it's like, okay, let's throw in some new ownerships, right? And like make it seem like Dwayne Wade is really investing in this thing. And we've got all this money now. No, you don't. No, you don't. There's probably like they felt so much pressure last year. They should have done it the year after they won the championship, but it was happening last year. All this pressure to come up with all this PR spin noise, new facility, look at our new ownership, look what we're doing. When at the end of the day, it's like lipstick on a pig. It doesn't feel like that's real. I want to know the truth. I would love to know the real numbers. I want to know what the actual business plan is, because I'm not seeing anything right now. But anyway, my point is, it's interesting to me that, you know, we're talking about Toronto and these expansion teams, and then we've got a franchise like Chicago that's currently the new dumpster fire. And it's like, how does
they practice at a community center?
And how is this still like operational in the current world of the WNBA? And
how do we have a team who's won a championship? I mean, a team in general, forget winning a championship. How do you have a team that their practice facility is a public community center?
Because that was okay 10 years ago. Because they could get away with it 10 years ago. It starts with ownership.
Mm-hmm. So, Rachel, one last thought. Who's your goat?
Lynn Dunn right now.